You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Business Spotlight podcast for the week. It is the 3rd of April 2019, and in studio today, we're going to be having a discussion just around what's been going on at SARS. That's the South African Revenue Authority, the people that are taking our taxes. There's been a bit of a tension going on as there's been industrial action over the last couple of weeks, but it seems that has actually come to an end this morning, in fact, and we are joined in studio by representatives from SARS and the Public Servants Association. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Nahao into the studio with us. So I'm joined in studio by Takalani Musekwa, who is the Executive for Remuneration and Benefits, Human Capital and Development with the South African Revenue Services. How are you, Takalani?
I'm well, thank you, Mudiwa.
Thank you so much. And then I'm also joined in studio by Stefan Viljoen, who is a labor relations officer from the Public Servants Association, that is PSA. How are you, Stefan?
Fine yourself, Mudiwa.
Fine, thank you. I think just as a point of departure, we know this thing has now come to an end today, in fact. But why, what were the bones of contention when the industrial action actually happened? And do the parties feel like they've actually reached an amicable agreement?
Well, I think organized labor during November 2018 submitted a list of demands for the coming wage negotiations that need to start. The previous agreement that we had would have lapsed on the 31st of March 2019. And you can't just start after the agreement has lapsed, you know, because our employees were set to receive the highest or higher salary increase already on the 15th of April. So because it's quite a lengthy process, during November we already submitted that list of demands. And during the discussions with the employer and on the demands that we've made, you know, we couldn't reach an agreement before we believed, you know, that now we've reached a deadlock, and therefore we've declared the various disputes and then ultimately embarked on the strike action itself.
Okay, cool. So in terms of the do you, are you guys, obviously you've signed, and PSA was the first trade union to actually sign the agreement. Are you 100% in agreement with the 8% that was there? Because I think the initial demand was 11, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, our original demand when we submitted the list of demands was 15%.
Okay, 15.
But it was obviously during the discussions with the employer that was reduced, you know, to ultimately 11.4, in which we declared a dispute with a list of other things that was outstanding as well. From the PSA point of view, as the administration side, you know, the union side, we believe the offer that the employer presented on Sunday night was quite a reasonable offer, taking all things, you know, into consideration. And therefore, we have then approached our members to say, you know what, this is the final or an offer from the employer. Would you be willing to accept that or not? But as I said, from our side, I think we've tried to encourage members to say, you know, we believe it's as good as it's going to get, you know, so maybe we must decide whether we're going to take it.
Okay. And then, Takalani, do you feel like it was necessary for SARS workers to actually go on strike, or could this have been settled in some other way without? Because I think the biggest inconvenience was on the people of South Africa more than anything else, who in the last week were trying to file their, you know, their tax returns for the financial year end and all that.
Well, the issue of whether it was necessary or not, it's debatable. But obviously, we would like to think that there was genuine grievances from the staff that they felt that we are not addressing, which at least made us feel that there is, up to the very end, even when the deadlock was done, we continue to believe that we will be able to find a solution. And therefore, even within 2 days of the strike beginning, and we called upon the colleagues to say, let's get around the table and see if we can resolve this thing, there was commitment from all parties that we need to find a solution as soon as possible. Because obviously the inconvenience and disruption of the service was not acceptable to the taxpayers and the South African public. The only issue was that we were still very far from each other. Organized labor was sitting at 11.4%. We were sitting at 7% on a single term.
Mm.
Because we said, well, if we want to go for a single term, it will have to be something that we can manage within a particular year.
What's a single term for our listeners who might not understand?
A single term simply means that we agree now that this is going to be the increase,
yeah,
and then next year, 2020, we must renegotiate again what the increase is going to be next year.
Okay.
So we felt that we need a three-year term, which means that we agree for the next 3 years what the increases are going to be each year.
Yeah.
And our proposal then was we give 8% increase across the board in the first year, and then we give CPI plus 1% over the two subsequent years.
Yeah.
And then when we were, so when we met on Friday night and on Sunday afternoon, organized labor said, well, we hear you. The only way we can consider your three-year term is if you increase the second and third year increase to CPI plus 2 instead of CPI plus 1.
Yeah.
So we went away over the weekend and re-looked at our numbers. And the biggest issue for us was we already have published numbers that SARS has over the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The government, National Treasury, they issue every year when the minister goes to parliament to give the budget speech.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers for all the departments, including SARS, are put on the table to say, this is what you have over the next 3 years. So we have those numbers.
Yeah.
And they were made available for us as far back as October last year in the medium-term speech.
Uh-huh.
So we knew what room we have.
Yes.
And
what's realistic, what's not. Yeah.
Yeah. And in that room, 11% was just not possible. So we then said, look, when we went over the numbers over the weekend, with the things that we have already implemented over the last year, it was possible to move to CPI plus 2 over the last subsequent 2 years.
Yeah.
So we then came back and said on Sunday night and said, well, we can consider going to CPI plus 2 on the basis that it's a three-year term. It provides SARS with stability to say over the next 3 years, at least we can focus on other things. As you can see, wages take a lot of time to negotiate. They take half the year. So if we only had a single term, effectively in 6 months' time, we'll be starting this process again. So this allows us now to be able to focus on other things within the organization. We have, as Stefan said, there was a list of about 26 demands that were tabled by organized labor when we started in November.
And, last year,
yeah, and a number of those we have not been able to resolve. We have set up task teams that will, in the National Bargaining Forum, which will then need to look at those and resolve them.
Are you able to let us know what some of those sticking points are? Possibly, is that, you know, for public?
Well, they are, I wouldn't call them sticking points.
Yeah.
They are simply the demands that we felt there is need for more time for both parties to sit around the table, not under the pressure of wages,
yes,
to be able to find solutions.
Yes.
Because the wages are very pressurized in terms of their atmosphere. So there are certain things that need a lot more time, a lot more relaxed environment to be able to find each other. So we felt that those ones we can take back to the NBF, NBF, which is what we've done.
So if I can just bring Stefan back in, what are some of these other issues that are still pending?
Yeah, so what we've agreed to, the items to be taken to this task team to go and try within 6 months of signing the agreement to try and resolve them would relate to the pay progression and compensation.
Yeah.
So in that sense, we need to almost review the remuneration policy from SARS to make progression provision for a pay progression to be implemented. We need the GTP cash allowance, you know, a short-term insurance subsidy, which was one of the regional demands in which the employer agreed that we can look at approaching various service providers for short-term insurance.
Yeah.
And with the buying power of SARS having 11,000 or 10,000 employees, see if we can then manage to get discounts for employees so that if they have short-term insurance, at least pay less for that, you know. So that will also assist in your disposable income.
Yeah.
Then there's also a demand that was made by Howard with regards to the housing and then also the medical aid schemes to just, there's certain challenges experienced with the current medical aid schemes, which we also want to address, and that's why we believe that if we address this in a policy task team, that we can, you know, deal directly with what is the issues, and we can try and find solutions for them. There's a proposal to define or redefine the extended sick leave policy as well, so we want to make some definition changes to that policy, and then also the promotion policy, in which the employer already have got a recruitment policy, but, you know, it doesn't speak to promotion really. So we also want to look into that, to either review the recruitment and selection policy or then to, you know, have a promotion policy. And then currently the employer is providing dependent bursaries But we also wanted to look at the policy to make certain changes to make it easier for dependents to either qualify or for more dependents to qualify in terms of what the qualifying criteria is.
It really sounds like I'm just listening to this, and it really sounds, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too deeply, but it sounds like you have issues with how the language that's in existing policies, and you want it to be more straightforward.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like, for example, the dependent bursary program, we have suggested to say that currently only one child per employee can qualify.
Yeah.
And it's our view to say that how does a parent then determine which child must they decide to apply for this bursary?
Yeah.
So and we also wanted to say that the current level is if you earn below 400,000. So we've also made a demand that threshold level must be increased as well.
Yeah.
So that even if you're earning 500,000, at least you can still qualify to have your child receive a dependent bursary. We've actually proposed a sliding scale that, 600,000 you can automatically qualify for a full benefit, and above 600,000 maybe 75% will be paid and 50% will be paid for higher amounts as well. So it's not just the language part, it's that we just want to make sure that our members receive the best benefit out of what SARS is providing, and then the last one that we had was the retirement exit gift, which we said that when somebody retires, at least the employer has a token of appreciation for the years of service, just provide them with some form of a gift as well.
Okay. Takalani, very quickly, we want to understand perhaps on SARS's part in terms of affordability, right? Because earlier on you alluded to the fact that you guys have numbers around what the next 2 to 3 years will look like from the budget, et cetera, et cetera. What do the numbers look like, and how many... I think even before we get to the numbers, how many workers does SARS actually have? I can imagine that the capacity to collect over R1 trillion in revenue, you guys must have quite a big workforce that you're trying to cater for.
We have about 12,800 employees.
Yeah.
The bargaining unit employees who are the employees that the trade unions were negotiating for are about 10,800.
Yeah.
So there's about 2,000 who are at management level. In terms of the costs, which is one of the reasons that we felt that some of these things need to be deferred to the NBF, because they all have cost implications.
Yes.
So if, for example, you agree on the retirement gift, or you agree on dependent bursaries, or you agree on pay progression, before you agree on what the salary increase is going to be, you might find that your costs then are messed up.
Yes.
So now that we have a 3-year agreement which tells us, okay, from a salary point of view, this is what the landscape is going to look like in terms of salaries, then you are able to say, okay, if we need to start considering all these other things, what does it do then to that budget, that view that we have over the 3 years? Then you can begin to have a proper conversation.
Yeah.
But until you resolve the salaries,
yes,
you don't know what is lying, what costs are lying, else. All these other things.
Yeah.
So because all of them do carry some cost, which need to be factored in.
Yeah.
So when we tried to do that, so in the beginning of the negotiations, we went away, in fact, and we try to cost all of them to say this is what it will mean effectively.
So sort of like a scenario.
Yes. And it became clear that we can't deal with them alongside the salaries.
Yeah.
Because whatever concessions we make on the salaries has implications for the rest of these, which is why we were very appreciative of the fact that organized labor felt agreed with us that let's defer these ones to the NBF and let's conclude first on the wages. And then the items that remained as part of the wages were ones that we could easily take along with the increase.
Mm.
And that's where we're able to do that.
And then how do you, actually guarantee that these issues won't actually, how can I put this, that it won't lose steam? Or what's the impetus that now that the strike is over, that things will actually be taken care of?
We have done this before. So in previous negotiations, we've had similar situation where there are some items that we agreed that they probably don't belong in the wage negotiations. They can be deferred to the NBF. And we normally then, as part of the agreement, we say we plan to conclude this within 3 months or within 6 months of the signing of the wage agreement. And we've done the same here. So we've given ourselves 6 months to say.
Okay, 6 months. So there's a timeline.
Yes.
Okay.
So both of us are committed to trying to make sure that in that period we try to close out all these issues. So it's not like it's going to be open-ended and we may never get to them. So yeah. The intention is that within 6 months we must resolve on all these other issues.
Let me bring Stefan in. That particular process, the next 6 months, where you guys are trying to put to rest all of these issues, are you guys involved in that process, or does SARS go away and do its scenario analysis and bring back what it can do, and then you accept or not accept, or do you guys have an engagement process where you're actively also part of the process?
So SARS has got a national bargaining forum in which all the negotiations is taking place.
Yeah.
And we meet once a month at least, or as at a minimum, to, you know, anything that's we've got issues with as organized labor with the employer in certain divisions, we can then raise it at the NBF. And these items would then also be deferred to the NBF, and the NBF will create a task team with specific terms of reference, with specific task team members, you know. So we will split this maybe into 3-4 different task teams so that you don't sit with only one group that has to deal with all 9 outstanding items.
Yeah.
And then that task team need to provide a report or a regular report back to the NBF. And once they've concluded with this work, hopefully before the 6 months, it must be accepted and adopted again by the National Bargaining Forum. So there is some legitimacy about it that, you know, Big Brother is watching, you know, the NBF, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
And the NBF, which is represented by the employer and then both the organized labor, you know, NAHAO and PSA.
Yeah.
So we've got a vested interest to make sure that that task teams are indeed doing the work that they're supposed to be doing and finalizing it within the 6 months as prescribed by the agreement that we have.
And then, Takalani, how big is the actual wage bill for SARS, if we can ask? Because I think the annual one, is there a way we can understand how big that wage bill is?
The numbers are public, by the way.
Yeah.
they are in the budget ENE for 2019.
Yeah.
So if you guys have access to that,
yeah.
It's available on the National Treasury website.
Yeah.
So you can go there and check them out. And they are there for the past years and for the next 3 years going forward.
Okay.
In terms of all people costs,
yes,
included, we are talking about 7.3 billion rand
for the year,
for per annum. Yes,
per annum. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought you were about to tell us it's for per month, and then I was
going no, per annum.
Okay. Now, I think we can actually just switch gears as we come to the end and just talk about the future of SARS, because one of the big sticking points for the institution has just been the fact that there wasn't a permanent replacement for Tom Mayani, and recently, Edward Kisweta was actually announced as the new SARS commissioner. Should be starting at the start of next month, and he's actually taking over from Mark Kingan, who has been the acting commissioner. So what do you think are some of the issues that Edward might have to start dealing with from the moment he gets into office, especially as it pertains to some of these labor negotiations, so that this time next year we're possibly not having the same conversations again?
Well, I don't want to speak on his behalf about yeah. what he needs to focus on, but obviously as the head of the institution, part of his number one role is to inspire and lead the organization and show direction and show vision of where we need to go and so on.
Yeah.
So primarily, I think in the next few months, his will be to cast the vision for the organization.
Yeah.
To say, this is where you have been and this is the future I see for SARS.
Yeah.
And articulate that to the employees that they too can see it and join him in walking that direction.
Yeah.
So I see that as the primary thing he needs to do up front. Otherwise, the rest of the staff, the operational staff, are on the go. They are continuing. There are things that already we have started doing that were raised by the Nugent Commission and so on. So those are already happening. There'll be some things that he might want to come in and tweak here and there and so on. But primarily, I see his role to come in and cast a vision for the organization to say, this is where we need to go. We need to rebuild this organization into the institution that internationally it can be respected amongst all the other revenue authorities.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, I think from a labor point of view, from PSA side, is that we obviously want him to address staff morale.
Yeah.
Staff morale in SARS is very, very low at this stage, you know.
Yeah.
There's a number of, you know, new divisions that we would like to see being created as well, or even enhanced, to ensure that our members can go out and do revenue collection and make sure that we collect all revenue that is due. Then also, you know, our members in the recent past have gone through a lot of negative changes in which other divisions were broken up, or, you know, their grades were downgraded, you know, and they were led to do other things that they were not supposed to do, or according to us, that they were not trained to do itself. And these are the things that for staff to be able to go and be happy and be able to, you know, collect revenue is the things that we also want to see addressed. Besides just creating a vision for SARS and how they have to operate, you also need to take care of your employees behind the scenes as well.
And then, if I may just ask, what are, because you asked, you said something about new divisions being created. What are those divisions?
You know, South Africa is losing a lot of money out of the illicit trade in tobacco, for example, and this illicit trade in money or currency itself. So you need to have divisions that will be able to clamp down on those areas.
Yeah.
You know, if you even look at these cash communities, almost if you want to call it that, which only operates in cash, you know, so therefore there's no VAT being collected on that, there's no tax being paid on those things. So these are the things that we say as a country, if we have to really collect money, we must also look at other ways to collect money and just not the normal standard ways that we've been doing it. And we would like to see that the creation of divisions that will be able to do that, go into new places where SARS have not ventured before, and then also collect revenue to make sure that we can reach the target itself.
Yeah. And then lastly, on the part of SARS, I just want to ask Thekelani, on the macro level for South Africa as a whole, I think the issue of unemployment, labor, all of this, it's a big issue in the economy. So for the rest of 2019, what do you see as being some of the challenges that as employers are going to face when it comes to relating with labor? And then I'll ask Stefan the reverse of that question. Yeah.
Well, obviously, the economy is not doing well. The growth year on year is very low. It's below 1%, probably for 2-3 years in a row. The cost of living is rising. We are facing a huge petrol increase, as you just said. electricity is going to be increasing in a big way. Eskom needs the money to be able to get the economy going. If we don't get the money, then the load shedding will continue. The economy will continue to be dampened. So the challenge is that the environment is not good. The living conditions for most employees in the country is tough. People are struggling. And therefore, you will find that labor will be coming with huge demands for salary increases. And at the same time, organizations are facing a troubled period that they are not, they will not be able to afford those for the reasons that load shedding has reduced productivity for many organizations. Some of them have to shut down. The wastage in terms of the cuts where they have to throw away some of their products so that they are busy producing while the load shedding happens and so on. So many of them are losing money in the process. The cost of transporting stuff with the petrol price going up is going to make the cost higher. So the trading environment is tough for organizations. And therefore, you're going to have then face the challenge where employees are struggling and they're asking for higher increases. Organizing themselves are struggling and they can give less. And so the challenge will then be, how do we find each other and does that we don't then collapse the economy? Because the one option is where organized labor obviously forces the organizations through strikes and stuff like that, where organizations start relenting and giving higher increases that they cannot afford. And then in a few years, in a few months, then they start retrenching, which then becomes a ripple effect in the economy.
Yeah.
Because for every 10 employees you retrench in one organization, the multiplier effect in the economy is big.
Yes.
So it's not just the 10 employees that lose jobs.
Yeah.
It is a lot of other jobs that get lost because the ripple effect in the economy. So those things then start working their way across the economy, which is why you find when countries go through economic problems, they go into a downward spiral until they hit the bottom. And then you start rebuilding out of that and it becomes very difficult to get out of a hole when you are too deep. So I'm hoping that for the sake of building a future that all of us can be proud of for our country, that both organized labor and employers will understand the issues of each other and be able to find that middle ground. And I believe that our agreement with NEHAO and the PSA represents that. The employees who were sitting at 11.4% were living sitting at 7.7%. And somehow we understood each other to say, we understand where you're coming from, but this is where we are coming from. And on the basis of that, we were able to find a reasonable middle ground that all of us could agree on. And I think that is the spirit that probably in all sectors we need to approach these things.
Stefan?
Yeah, well, I think the concern that we have is got that SARS collects 90% of the revenue that government is utilizing to provide services to its citizens.
Yeah.
And with SARS even, well, we call it retrenchments in a sense, because they've really downsized their workforce from close to 15,000 to just over 11,000. You know, and those are the people that are supposed to go out and be able to collect revenue.
Mm.
So as much as we say the performance of SARS cannot just be coupled with, you know, whether we've hit the target or not, the revenue collection target, because there's lots of other businesses and divisions in SARS as well that don't necessarily, you know, collect revenue, but are contributing towards that as well. If you take, for example, the border posts, you know, that ensure that South Africa, you know, is safe through preventing illicit goods or you know, drugs entering or exiting the country as well.
Mm.
And we are saying that, you know, National Treasury has artificially reduced SARS's grant allocation.
Yeah.
And that has meant that they had to reduce the number of workers at SARS. That has also got now a rippling effect to say that now we can't collect revenue because, or enough revenue, because we don't have enough hands on deck to actually make the phone calls to taxpayers that's outstanding, to go do those investigations or audits to ensure that companies and individuals are tax compliant, that will then bring in the money itself. So in a sense, government has created this hole for themselves. We've cut off the organization that can collect revenue for us, and now we don't have money, and now we must go provide services. So these are the very services, healthcare services, you know, the police, security services, SASA, with the grants that is being allocated. If we don't have the money, we can't do those things.
Yeah.
And then our concern is still that instead of providing those services and making sure that our citizens have electricity and food and water and all those services provided as well, we go and we bail out SAA, for example, for the how many, you know, years in a row, which it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, there's other you know, flight carriers as well that is doing their own thing. They must pay for themselves, and if they don't make it, they exit the market.
Yeah.
Why should we be able to bail out SAA, and we know it's due to corrupt activities, why they need the money every time itself? So we are saying to National Treasury, recapacitate SARS. Give them more grant allocation so that we can capacitate them through not just staff, but that's one of the processes as well, but making sure that the systems is also aligned in SARS, is maintained and updated. Otherwise, we're going the same road as ESCOM. If we don't maintain the service, the IT system at SARS, we will have the same as ESCOM, where everything is going to fall flat and then you're not even going to collect anything itself. So we're really pleading to National Treasury to do that so that we can collect revenue and that the country can then go forward.
Recapacitate SARS, those are the words that are coming from Stefan Viljoen, who is a labor relations officer from the Public Servants Association. We're also in studio with Takalani Musekwa, who is the executive for remuneration and benefits from the South African Revenue Society. Some takeaways is just the fact that, as we heard, the news of the day is the fact that how that's the National Education, Health and Allied Workers Union, together with the Public Service Association PSA, have signed an agreement with SARS, starting with an 8% increase this year, and then for the next two subsequent years, it's CPI plus 2%, and it looks like it's a way forward. As you heard from what Takalani was saying, people, it's quite a tough economy that we are in. Both business and labor have to find some type of middle ground, because there's a lot of churn that people are feeling on both sides of the aisle. ESCOM is ravaging the way that people are operating their businesses, and there's a lot of money that's lost. But at the same time, the South African consumer, who makes up the labor force, is also under a lot of strain, whether it's interest rates, whether it's electricity, whether it's fuel. It's looking to be quite a tough position. SARS actually collected I think there was a bit of a shortfall, and these are just some of the issues that the new commissioner is going to be taking care of come 1 May 2019. So that's it for today. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening to the show. We were talking about SARS. Make sure you tune in same time, same place next week. You can find us online. We are on Iono, and you can go and find all of our Business Day Spotlight podcasts there. So for myself, Muriel Mop, Justice Kavasa, it's good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.